previously.tvpodcastnetwork.
Hello, and welcome to The Blotter Presents Summary Judgment. This is Episode 1, Concerning Law & Order True Crime, The Menendez Murders, Episode 2. That theme music, it's so cute. Incongruously. Hello. Welcome to The Blotter Presents Summary Judgment, which is a shorter The Blotter Presents devoted to continuing coverage of a single series that we are finding noteworthy. This inaugural episode of Summary Judgment and the half dozen following will be putting Law & Order True Crime, The Menendez Murders, under a microscope. And I will be joined for this series by my Again With This co-host and the genius who named this little spinofflet, Tara Ariano. Hello, T-Bone.
Hello.
Thank you for doing this with me. Before we get into it, don't forget to visit us on the forums at previously.tv/forums to give us your summary judgment on the show as it continues. And now, on with our show. Let's begin with the opening statement from tvguide.com. This is what happens in the episode. Seemingly innocuous comments Lyle made previously about his parents come back to haunt him when Detectives Zoller and Linehan, and their mustache, interview the brothers' friends and acquaintances. Eric, overcome by guilt, makes a shocking confession to his psychologist, Dr. Jerome Oziel, having overheard a therapy session with Lyle and Eric. Oziel's mistress, Judalon Smith, goes to the police with a tip after Oziel tries to cut ties with her. Very understated TV guide. We will get into it.
Yeah.
And finally, attorney Leslie Abramson makes a move to represent the brothers. This is basically what happens. And yet we have some comments, starting with, on the good side, our star witnesses. Good things about the episode. Starting with the fact that I cut that chung chung sound effect, and now I'm going to be abusing it for the next couple of months. Tara, would you like to begin with some things that you enjoyed about this episode?
Sure. Some of this is repeating what I said in our the Big Blotter Presents episode about the series last week, because we had already seen the first two. So this I'll try and keep it brief. But I thought the show did a good job establishing Leslie as a mama bear for her clients, both with her the hitman who had been assaulted in prison that she comes and cleans up, and then later in her first meeting with Eric when she comes armed with trail mix and fun facts about Cortez, I think.
A delightful pronunciation of the word conquistador, which is...
Yes, that's right.
Fairy Carmela loved it.
Yeah. And Josh Charles and Heather Graham, just the commitment that they bring to their roles of a couple of real dirtbag shitheads in Oziel and Judalon, because you can't half-ass it with those performances, and they don't. And I love them both for it, even though they're so over the top. Like, a lot of this, the show, I think, has gotten criticism for being a poor addition to the Law and Order verse, and I agree, like, it's not a very Law and Order-y show, chung-chung to the contrary.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Oh, I paused because I thought you were going to chung-chung there.
It's never
like
too
they
late.
Are very, I mean, I know this all takes place in the 80s, but they are bringing, like, 80s primetime soap level acting to it, and, like, it's almost like they're in a different show, but I don't care. Like, I love them.
Well, this is exactly what a friend of the show, Alan Sempenwall, said about it in his review, and actually I was talking about it with him on IM, and I think he was wondering, like, as a huge Law & Order buff also, if I thought it was good. Tara, you said that it was criminal intent-y and not in a good way. And
yeah.
I like criminal intent more than you do, but I agree that it's not in a good way. But Sepinwall's comment is that it's like Charles and Graham are in the Ryan Murphy version of this, and I would not disagree.
In the Ryan Murphy American Horror Story version of this.
Yes.
I mean, I think American Crime Story was a lot more subtle than this is, personally.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. And I think that, once again, like, having something on network, you're running into some obstacles in terms of your portrayals of things and how you can do it that Ryan Murphy doesn't have, that it wouldn't have on HBO, but you could certainly do a
American Crime Story sorry, or I just back before we move on, they are definitely Ryan Murphy-esque in the sense that like these two characters could be transplanted to a new series of Scream Queens and not stick out at all. Like that's how campy they are. But I just don't want to denigrate American Crime Story, at least the first season, the only one, of course, that has aired to date, which I thought was very good.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. This, you know, especially the scene where he's hauling her like by the hips out of her Sylvia Plath oven suicide attempt situation, like that isn't supposed to be funny, but
no,
it's absurd.
It is.
Certainly.
Yes.
Speaking of absurd, if you're all set with the Murphy discussion,
proceed.
I am loving Sam Yeager's porn stash. I'm not. Is that how you pronounce it? Jaeger?
I'm not sure. I don't know.
I did not even recognize him as Joel from Parenthood. I was like, where have I seen that guy before? And Tara had to point out that that's who it was. I was like, oh, yeah, Joel.
Yeah, it was the best when you're like, I don't think I got to him. Like, no, you did.
I was like, was that season three? You're like, oh, no. That rewatch
really
stuck.
It really does
really
transform
stuck.
Him.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm enjoying that. I'm also enjoying his occasional side eyes at his fellow detective. Very well done. Like this role is fairly boring. He's there to give and receive exposition pretty much exclusively, but he's doing his best.
The only other two notes I had was another thing that we touched on in the big episode. Can't touch this music drop. Very well deployed. As you said in the big episode, quite showy, not strictly necessary, but is there ever a wrong time to hear that song? No. And finally, the subtle creepiness of there's a scene where we see Eric. Yes, Eric is the tennis one. Eric on the tennis court chatting with this girl that apparently has become, his new love interest. And he says that after they kiss, he says his mother would be so proud because she was always giving him deadlines to get a girlfriend, which is like, it's creepy on a variety of levels and they don't get into it. They just like sort of drop that line and then move on, which I thought was an interesting choice and something I assume we'll be getting into more because what a weird thing for a mother to do.
Yeah, we'll be getting into this both in our next section and we talked about it to an extent in the big episode, but there's, like, they're just not quite committing yet as to the writing, I mean, as to what it really feels about what happened and what it thinks the brothers feel about what happened. And this kind of like psycho adjacent thing with his mom, like what role Kitty really played in all of this is like, I'm looking forward to moving past this part and getting a little more insight into what the show thinks we're supposed to believe, because there's a lot happening and it doesn't all fit together.
Yeah.
So that seems like a good time to move on to aggravating factors. Things that weren't maybe so hot about the show. Tara, would you like to begin?
Sure. I have a couple of anachronistic sweaters. I cut pictures of them. One is Lyle's buddy, Glenn, the Hot Wing franchise collaborator.
Okay.
Who is in a sweater that I am fairly certain was from J. Crew, like in the mid 90s. So like after this, I recognized it because I really liked their men's stripy sweaters.
Okay.
I don't know why. It was the past. And then Eric is, when he sits down with the detectives, is in a sweater that is 100% from the Gap in the 2000s, which I know because I had the scarf version of it for years.
Huh.
So if you wouldn't mind adding those to the show notes, you can see these stripy sweaters that are all I could fixate on in this episode, apparently.
I actually thought that the J. Crew sweater, despite its being anachronistic, the fact that it was worn over a turtleneck by a Princeton student was like, I was like, I knew that guy.
Mm-hmm. They 80s up the Gap sweater too, by, I think he has a polo shirt on under it. And I didn't put this in the notes, but I cut a picture of it as well of the Eric's girlfriend in a really fucking ugly romper. I won't even try to place it in time because it doesn't deserve that, but it has like flappy lapels, and then the lapels are like echoed on the waistband, and then it's got like spaghetti straps that are tied. It's really, really ugly. Anyway,
yeah, it's a lot.
Couple of fashion notes there.
And you had another anachronism that you were asking if there was still smoking on planes in 1989.
Oh yeah, I cut that because you said there was. So, but go ahead.
Yeah, I think they had cut it on short hops, like a flight that was shorter than 2 hours, you couldn't. And then they were slowly eliminating it from the longer flights. But then that was a weird thing because the guy was also listening to like 70s smooth jazz on his earphones. Like, why are we seeing that flying across the country sucks? We know.
Right.
But on the other hand, the show doesn't necessarily think that it's across the country. Here's clip one.
Mao complained about his dad.
He was happy there was 2,000 miles between them.
I bet he was even happier that the actual distance of 3,100 miles between Los Angeles and Princeton was between them. What the fuck? Who thinks that's 2,000 miles?
That's maybe really, that guy just really likes the song 2,000 Miles. I don't know.
Maybe. There's like absolutely no reason that nobody caught that, but okay. you had another clip.
Yeah, go ahead.
Shall I?
Just got my wee-wee slapped by Chaliff.
Would a cop say wee-wee slapped? I know it's network TV and they can't say dick slapped, but can't they? I feel like you can say dick at 10.
Yeah. I'm sure you can say dick at 10. They were saying it on the CW at 9, 15 years ago. Pacey.
Yeah.
Never forget.
But I think that's, I think there's some kind of like weird hair splitting with that, where it's like calling someone a dick is different than saying dick as a synonym for penis.
You know what? I think you're right.
But even so, I believe that we've blown past that in 2017 is A. And B, even if you can't say dick, like come up with something else. That,
yeah.
Like, would a detective say wee wee?
Any
really?
Other euphemism? Junk?
Yeah.
Twig? I don't care. Anything but wee wee. You're not a nursery school teacher.
I got my crank slapped. I don't know. There are options is my point. Wee wee is very dumb sounding.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. It's bad. Is it better or worse than Jude Law and Oziel's wigs?
Equally as bad. Jude Law and Oziel's wigs are shockingly like they're like Halloween store wigs for both of them. And the fact that they're in the same storyline is rough, especially since I think the woman that is playing Oziel's wife gets to wear her real hair, which just points up the fakeness of Jude Law and Oziel's hair.
And I just don't understand why. Like, I get it on Heather Graham, I guess, although it doesn't seem like it's a particularly turn of the 90s styled wig.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no reason to put one on Josh Charles.
Yeah.
Like, just have him grow out. Like, I know his hairline is receding, but just have him grow out the back a little. Like, this wouldn't have been a thing. And on top of that, a wig plays such a huge part in this case, and the person who is wearing a wig in the story, his hair is fine.
Yes.
You can't.
That's the weirdest thing about all this.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't get it.
Speaking of I don't get it, just a mention here of Leslie's boring husband. I don't need to keep seeing him pop in and be disappointed at the amount of time she's spending with him or not. Like, oh, is this our nooner? Like, shut up. Go back to work if you're going to bitch all the time.
Yeah, really. And like Chris Bauer. OK, we get it. He's been on every Law and Order franchise at least 3 times and Third Watch and probably was on Oz and or Homicide at some point. Like he came in, he got his check. We're good.
Yeah.
And oh, did they have to cast Reaser as Pamela Bozanich? Really? She's the worst. And she looks terrible. Girl, I don't like you, but eat a sandwich.
Bad. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she looks rough. She didn't bug me that much because she hasn't had much to do, but I'm sure it's coming.
Yeah, it's totally coming, and I'm not excited about it.
Mm-hmm. And then we can close up with our two questions. Would Eric and Lyle have been put in neighboring cells when they were arrested? That seems weird to me.
I don't know. I don't get how sort of LA County lockup works versus, I mean, I think here they would have just been both sent to Rikers and put in Gen Pop probably.
Right.
So they would have been together, but like not together. But yeah, I'm pretty sure they wouldn't have, and it would just have been like Or maybe they wanted to do that so that they would talk across the bars and they could get something incriminating. But I don't know.
Right.
That seemed more like a TV, like for the sake of the shot thing. And that was our header photo for the big podcast. And wrapping this section up, as I referred to before, I hope that the writing sort of coheres around a single idea of what they think happened soon, because right now this, the sense I'm getting is that they think Lyle was the like murdered Svengali and definitely the lead and the boss. And I'm not saying that wasn't true, but when they suffered the same abuse, it seems very strange to me. And they both pulled the trigger, I think. It seems strange to me that Eric is the one who is destroyed to this level and Lyle is having to deal with him like he's a 7-year-old. Like, maybe that tracks psychologically. I am not a psychiatrist. I don't know.
Right.
But it's just not quite, it's not quite working, and they keep coming back to it and making sure that we get it. There's like 7 scenes where the substance is Lyle being like, Eric, I'm going to take care of this. Just shut up, which Eric doesn't do.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's, it's a little heavy. I'm excited to get into the trial and have a little less of the criminal intent-y stuff.
Yep.
So with all of that said, what is the verdict on this episode? Good, bad, indifferent, justifiable homicide?
There's enough in it to keep me interested. As I said in the big podcast, I only know, you know, how this story ends. And I didn't follow this trial when it was happening. So I don't know all of the stuff that came out in the trial. So this kind of table setting is interesting enough to me. And the amount of focus that they're putting on my favorite characters, apparently Judulon and Oziel, makes me think there's more to come with them, and I'm here for it.
I agree that, you know, that tends to get overlooked in these projects. As I said in the big podcast, is how long the wrangling over whether what they knew would be admissible went on. Years it went on. So I assume we're going to get more into that. And that means that we'll be spending more time with these characters, who I am also enjoying. But getting to the trial also means that we're going to get back to the procedural, like, order part of it, which I think is where this franchise does better. Like, criminal intent, I know it was on for 10 years, but it never quite figured out, I think, what it was trying to be. Didn't work as well as the others. And so, yeah, I thought this was more of a table setter episode, but there was plenty to keep me amused, and I'm looking forward to episode 3. And in episode 3, next time on The Blotter Presents Summary Judgment, Abramson tries to understand what drove Lyle and Eric to kill their parents, while the prosecution tries to exploit Judulon and Jerome's toxic relationship to get Dr. Daddy's tapes from his Menendez sessions admitted. You can admit The Blotter Presents to your social media circle at Blotter Presents on both Facebook and Twitter. I'm Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. This has been The Blotter Presents Summary Judgment, and until next time, we are adjourned.
In a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.